And you know how to adjust it too, I bet. Yeah.
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court erred in excluding the expert testimony of Dr. Kimberly Macklin, an expert on eyewitness identifications. Rule 702 is meant to be a rule of inclusion, allowing expert testimony when it is based on valid science and would assist the trier of fact to determine a fact and issue. An important part of the government's case was Megan Thompson's identification of the defendant, Darius Nicholas, as the individual with the firearm at the party. Dr. Macklin's testimony would have helped the jury understand issues with Ms. Thompson's testimony and identification. The exclusion of this expert testimony was error, and reverser and remand for a new trial is required. Dr. Macklin's testimony meets both prongs of Rule 702. First, her testimony was based upon scientific knowledge. Now, I would note this doesn't appear to be strongly contested on appeal or was it before the district court. But her testimony was clear that the science behind expert eyewitness identifications is tested, subject to peer review and publication, and it is widely accepted within the scientific community. The government cites the Kimme case. That doesn't control here.
I mean, why not? Because I thought it did.
It does not here because in that case there were problems with how it was presented to the district court. And it's difficult to take those principles and apply them going forward because there really wasn't any proffer like we have in our case. There, the defense attorney, all that was done was putting in the CV of Dr. Gary Wells and just more general.
There wasn't any what?
There wasn't any proffer like there was in this case. Their defense attorney just put in the CV of Dr. Gary Wells that just discussed generally articles and the general science behind eyewitness identifications. Here, there was very thorough testimony by Dr. Macklin about the science behind eyewitness identifications and the study of it and how that is done in her scientific field. Under the second prong of 702, it would have helped the jury to understand or determine a fact and issue. Case law, more recent case law, makes clear that expert testimony on eyewitness identifications can be, but not always, is based upon common knowledge. And Dr. Macklin's proposed testimony, as illustrated by her proffer, makes this clear. And as other courts have acknowledged, consistent with Dr. Macklin's proffer, that sometimes this expert testimony can in fact dispel these common myths or common thoughts among lay people about eyewitness identifications.
Let me interrupt you because you know the Third Circuit has adopted allowing this expert testimony, right? But they're the only circuit that's reversed based on it, right?
The only federal circuit. The Arizona Supreme Court has reversed as well.
Let's stick to circuits for a second. The Supreme Court hasn't addressed it, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, thank you. The Fifth, what did they really do? Do you know what the Fifth really did?
I think they acknowledged it,
but they don't reverse or do anything.
I think the Fifth, and I have question marks in my notes on it, but my recollection or my thought was maybe that it was harmless error. And I think this goes to another issue with this the case law of whether when it's based off eyewitness identification alone, the failure to allow this testimony is more likely to be abuse of discretion. I think that kind of blurs the question between is it harmless error or is it abuse of discretion because this testimony was admissible. And I think that's where maybe some of the confusion comes from that Moore case out of the Fifth Circuit. But my interpretation of it was that it decided it on harmless error grounds.
What's the standard of review that we as a reviewing court apply here now to this ruling?
It's an abuse of discretion, Your Honor. And in some of these cases where the courts have said it's not an abuse of discretion because we can see that the district court went through this very thorough analysis and considered it and ultimately determined that it should not be admissible either under 702 or under Rule 403, we don't have this here. And in fact, in the district court's ruling finding that it was inadmissible under Rule 702, the district court misspoke about the proposed testimony and said, quite frankly, further illustrating why this testimony should have come in, indicating that it's unnecessary because Ms. Thompson had prior experience with Mr. Nicholas, so we don't need this expert testimony. In fact, Dr. Macklin's testimony stated that's incorrect, and that is a common myth that her testimony and expertise could have dispelled for the jury. That, in fact, when someone knows someone else, it's more of a confirmatory identification, and it is less reliable than a stranger identification.
Well, go ahead.
You know, there's a couple things going on here that this is in some ways an emerging science, right? I mean, because if you look at historically, there was sort of the movie or videotape view of memory. That in fact, that what happened is memories were implanted on your brain and they just played back sort of like a videotape. And if you had good recollection, then that was it. And if you knew somebody and if the circumstances were the kinds of things that were quite memorable, then that would happen. Well, as science has emerged, we've come to a new understanding of how memory works, and it's become more apparent that memory is a creative act, and that what ends up happening is not so much that you replay videos in your brain as it is that your brain recalls bits, pieces, and flashes, and then you fill in the gaps, right? And that's kind of the science that was laid in and what was proffered here. Okay, now that runs flat up against about 100 years of jurisprudence where we said, hey, that invades the province of the jury, that we know how our memories work, and therefore we should be able to allow the jury to decide that. There's nothing significant about this that really assists the jury. And in fact, it has the potential to confuse the jury to allow that testimony in. And so what we really run into here is emerging science is apparently at odds with this long-standing line of cases. The standard of review is abuse of discretion. This is a judge who went through kind of in detail, made some statements, says it doesn't come in under 702. You contend that she didn't really understand the science. I'm pretty sure he's going to deny that. All right. And then the next thing that happens, you say, but even so, she also gets the 400 series objections, and she says, I'm not letting it in anyhow. Because it misleads, confuses the jury, and it invades their province as well. So she's got all three of the suspenders and bootstraps tossed in it. Now, in order for you to get beyond the abuse of discretion, we've got to show that the judge abused discretion at each one of those steps. Okay. So would you just tell me question takes 12 hours, and I'm going to ask you to answer in 32 seconds. What are your three best arguments as to why she's wrong in each of those points?
Well, 702, basically what I've already stated, that she was incorrect in her analysis of the testimony. Under 403, again, there is no real analysis under 403. And the fact that it would waste the jury's time, it's one witness, one expert. Confuse the issues, Martin indicated, no. That's not a basis for excluding expert testimony. And that's something that could be dealt with in cross-examination and a jury instruction that was given in this case that states expert testimony should be considered like every other witness. If there are no further questions.
You may reserve. Okay. Mr. Murphy?
May it please the court. I'm arguing this case on behalf of Emily Neidel in our office, who was the trial attorney. I think it's important to keep in mind the standard of review. It is abuse of discretion. And on this record, it should be clear Judge Reed did not abuse her very broad discretion in deciding whether to admit evidence.
We also have told the trial court that you don't overturn a jury verdict lightly.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you apply the standard with that admonition.
Yes, it's applied with that admonition. And this court has said that the reliability of eyewitness identification is a matter of common understanding. It's interesting, the jurisprudence...
Is that the Kime or Kime case you're relying on?
That's the Martin case, 391. Martin relies on Kime.
How many times have we cited the Kime or Kime case or however you say it?
I couldn't honestly tell you that, Your Honor. I don't know how many times you've cited it, but I will say the jurisprudence in this area is appears to be about 30 years old now.
And that's the real issue. It's pretty clear that when I was in law school, that this was a really easy question. If somebody put a psychologist on to talk about memory, we'd have said, go away. That invades the province of the jury. That's just a done deal. But if you start looking at it, as the science has kind of emerged, and you look at what courts are doing, now the courts are all over the place, but we're still back to the discretion of the trial judge in letting it in. And the question really becomes, at that point, does this judge explain enough for us to say that it's no abuse of discretion, or did this judge fail to explain enough so that it must be an abuse of discretion?
Well, and certainly, as the court has noted, the judge did give several grounds. But the court can also affirm on the basis of any facts in the record or any basis in the record. And I think you do need to look at the record here respectfully. The record here is very strong. What the defendant wants is this expert to say this was a confirmatory identification of the defendant. There was no question that the defendant was at the party. The defendant admitted he was at the party. He admitted when he was arrested, he was wearing a red sweatshirt. So there was no dispute about him being at the party. He admitted his nickname was Chocolate. That's how the primary witness in this case identified him, as Chocolate. So there's no dispute about this confirmatory identification. There's nothing that the expert was going to add on that point. The expert would also say that the stereotypes and the witnesses, Thompson's expectations, might have been colored by the fact that she knew him from high school, believed she knew that he was a member of a gang called Young Money, which she believed was associated with firearms. So that's the other part of this. But ultimately, the expert's opinion was there is a high probability that it is possible that she misconstrued some object like a phone as a gun. A high probability that it is possible. That means like it's possible that it's possible that this person misconstrued an object as a gun.
Well, it sounds like reasonable doubt.
Well, it sounds like duh to me, frankly, Your Honor. Like duh, no doubt it's possible that somebody misconstrued an object as a gun, and the defense attorney can argue that. That's certainly appropriate. And effective cross-examination, I would argue, took place here. Mr. Nathan, a very accomplished defense attorney, did a tremendous job in cross-examination. In fact, he impeached the government's main witness here, Ms. Thompson, on several points. She initially identified this person as having the first name of Darian.
Sound like you're arguing for Ms. Quick here for a second.
Well, I'm saying that there were a number of effective points on cross-examination.
But that sounds like maybe the expert might have helped a little bit.
Well, but the jury doesn't need the expert testimony. It is cumulative, in effect. And the cases have suggested that where there is, and particularly where the witness is not the only witness on the point. The Fifth Circuit case and Moore, I think, the court was concerned about, you know, is it a critical, is this the only witness? Is expert testimony maybe critical to counter that only witness?
And here, I think, I get that, and I think you're right, but I'm cutting you off because here's what I wonder if this isn't really part of the analysis as well, and that is what the juries know, may not be what the science really supports. And that's really, I think, part of the question here as well, is that, you know, we believe that memory can be frail, and we believe that people make mistakes. But some of the things that we believe that confirm and make it more likely that some memory is true, turns out under the science are actually things that are more likely to make that memory untrue. For example, we believe that if someone is pointing a gun in our faces, that our memory is going to be really better because you're never going to forget that. Yet as you study the science, you start to find that, no, actually, your brain starts to really desperately want to fill in the gaps as to what's happening when you're in a life-threatening situation, and that sometimes it erroneously fills in those gaps. And the question really is that science helpful to the jury in evaluating the moment?
Well, it may be, but on this record, did the court abuse its discretion given the substantial evidence that is here, given the admissions made by the defendant that he was present at the scene, given the fact that he admits his nickname is Chocolate, given the fact that there were multiple witnesses. There were five witnesses. And the defense argues in their brief that there was one witness who identified the defendant. That actually is...
The others identified clothing.
Right. And there was no other, and they identified the man with the red clothing, silver gun, ran up the steps outside. People outside say a man in red clothing came out, the police chase him, and there's a silver gun man in red clothing. I think it's a stretch to say that they didn't, sure, nobody else identified him by name, but that is very common. Bank robber comes into a bank. How's he identified? By clothing. That's not to say that the witness didn't identify him. They don't know his name. So there was abundant evidence here of people saying that was the guy. And so in terms of there's a strong possibility that it was possible that this person, maybe it was a cell phone, or maybe it's a handgun. I mean, that's speculation. You're basically having expert testimony to invite the jury to speculate. And I dare say, Your Honor, with regards to your point about certainly the science is what it is, but, you know, are traumatic events impressioned on the brain? You know, where was I when JFK died? I could tell you exactly where I was when JFK died, what I remember. Where was I on 9/11? On the top floor of the courthouse in St. Louis. There are things that are very traumatic that I would submit. I could probably find an expert that would say those things are imprinted, and in traumatic situations, you're not going to forget that.
Yeah, and the distinction is whether you're personally in a life-threatening situation or in the zone of danger. That is, in fact, and that's, you know, that's complete apples and oranges to this case. But I'm saying, you know, what I'm saying is that lots of what we believe about science just isn't correct. I mean, I know where I was when JFK was assassinated. I mean, I just do. I could actually drive you to the place. But in the end... it's a different thing than if I was in the car where John Conley was sitting and what my recollection might be at that point.
Perhaps.
Maybe.
Perhaps. Maybe. But I submit I may be able to find an expert. And then what do we have? We've got battling experts telling a jury how to view things that the court instructed on. This also somewhat invades the court's province to instruct the jury. And really, it's a bit unseemly to me, frankly, that you would have experts testifying, perhaps competing experts testifying, when the court instructs on credibility, the court instructs on impeachment. And if the court should add another line in its instruction that maybe recognizes some principle of science, perhaps that's the way to go. But I submit this is not based upon data. It's not based upon, and the defendant argues there's two prongs to 702. There's actually four parts to 702. And the first part is that it will help the jury decide. I don't think it was necessary to help the jury decide in this case, particularly given the facts. I mean, an additional fact here, you know, the defendant was on Instagram, photo of him in a red sweatshirt with a silver gun. I mean, this is, and the expert says, well, those facts don't make any difference. Just because something is true doesn't make any difference to my theory. Well, the facts do make a difference. It may not make a difference in a lab. You can't replicate these circumstances in a lab, these traumatic events. You just can't. It may make a difference in the lab to the theory, but here the court is and the jury is called upon to make a decision based upon the facts that they, as the sole trier of facts, it's in their ability, and they could do that here. That's all I have. And
thank you for your argument. Ms. Quick.
So first, to address really what I think is the big issue, is whether this was an abuse of discretion and whether it could be, as the district court said, common knowledge that the jury could figure out. Looking to this cross-examination, yes, it was an effective cross-examination, but it was limited. However, as effective as an attorney, Mr. Nathan obviously is, he can't bring in, yes, but her identification is less reliable because she knew him. That's why they needed expert testimony. He can't say, through cross-examination of Ms. Thompson, yes, but based off of your prior knowledge of Mr. Nicholas, how your brain processed the information and how you perceived it and stored it in your memory, that could have impacted your identification of this as a firearm. So while there was cross-examination, it was limited by the absence of this expert testimony. And then, again, to address the prosecutor's argument on other witnesses, and they all identified him. In fact, the two security guards identified other people as individuals with the firearm. One identified Corian Pursley, who is the individual that Mr. Nicholas was with while he was walking near what was where the firearm was found. And those inconsistent and just quite frankly unreliable identifications that did not even identify Mr. Nicholas are not enough to get over harmless error or any abuse of discretion issues that existed by excluding this expert testimony on Ms. Thompson's identification, which was without a doubt the most damaging to the defense's case. Let me ask you,
because I bet you know, is Justice Sotomayor the only Supreme Court justice who's written on this issue? She has a separate opinion, doesn't she, about eyewitness
testimony? Yes, she does. That's the only.
Well, she wasn't joined by anybody else, right?
I don't believe so.
In that opinion, and no one else has written to your knowledge.
To my knowledge,
right.
Yes.
To mine, too. Thank you very much. Case 17-3750 is submitted for decision by the court.